Somewhere beyond the recesses of time and space, two podcasters are set adrift in a machine, picking up transmissions of movies that are forgotten but not gone.
You to guess how many movie theaters this movie was released in.
I feel like the magic number for us is usually like 3,000. Is it more than 3,000?
I mean, it is. Yes, it is. It's I think this might be the most every single theater in America was maybe showing this movie.
It's not more than 4,000, is it?
No, it's 3,311 theaters.
My God, like, you couldn't not watch this movie. If you went to a theater, you could have bought a ticket to see Children of Men, and they put you in Barnyard anyway.
This movie was in theaters. Now, this is what I don't have, the data. You know I love my data.
Oh,
the data I don't have is...
You're a data's boy.
How many theaters it drops off over this course of time, but it was in release for 150 days. That's almost half the year.
They really wanted this movie to happen. Like, the powers that be wanted America to fall in love with these rowdy cows.
I said it before, and I'll say it again. The nation had Kevin James fever for, like, a split second, and it was a bad fever. It was a bad fever. I'm glad we found a vaccination for it.
The fever broke after about 150 days. But the casualties were thousands and thousands of empty theaters.
A budget of $51 million. I think that's about what you'd expect for a 2006 animated film.
Sure.
Domestic, $72 million. It turned a profit. I mean,
wow.
That's not what they would expect at that budget, I think, because of the marketing campaigns that go along with it, but...
If they had a movie in over 3,000 theaters for 150 mm-hmm. days and didn't turn a profit, like, people would have been tried. Like, the studio would have killed some people for that.
So you got to imagine that they were hoping for a franchise out of this. You can see them probably doing more with a marketing budget, assuming, like, if we just get people in the theater and we turn a healthy, you know, profit margin on this, then we can just start printing money with the plush toys, with the lunch boxes, and then we'll get them with all of the subsequent big budget sequels, as well as the, like, the Barnyard 1.5 that's released between the big mm-hmm. releases.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they did make a Barnyard TV series that ran for a couple seasons on Nickelodeon.
Did they really? Based off of this?
Yes, based off of this, and we still forgot it. They were trying so hard to make us remember, and we didn't. This was America's greatest act of cultural defiance, was us not remembering this movie that they really wanted us to care about.
Imagine this. You are a director who... does seminal movies that stick in people's childhoods, from Critters, if you are in the horror crowd, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead, The Mighty Ducks. And then you go on to just a string of movies that were fine at the box office, but just completely forgotten. Holy Man, Rockstar, and Man of the House. Along with this movie, Life or Something Like It.
He's the Snapchat of directors. Every movie he makes disappears. Like, this movie is the gritty reboot of Tarzan. It is the Dark Knight of Tarzan, or it's trying to be, at least. And it that glosses over the fact that Tarzan is inherently ridiculous. He is a dude who he's like Dr. Doolittle fucked, basically. He's like a ripped buff sexy guy who can talk to the animals.
Wait. Are you saying Eddie Murphy doesn't fuck?
Did you see
the Robert Downey Jr. movie?
Clearly that Doolittle fucks. I'm saying that Tarzan is like if Dr. Doolittle fucked more. Like if Dr. Doolittle, like, look, Robert Downey Jr., Dr. Doolittle, occasionally, sure, but it's not really his number one thing. Tarzan is like if Dr. Doolittle went to the gym every day and, like, was drinking protein powder before going to a nightclub
well,
with his bros.
Clearly you haven't seen Rex Harrison in his top hat. I would be curious to chart how many movies we cover that include a Steppenwolf song as a montage. Whether it's Magic Carpet Ride or Born to be Wild, I feel like we've already seen about three of them.
Like, they wrote this scene because they wanted an excuse to use Magic Carpet Ride. It was not the other way around. The movie's called Sahara.
How do you think Clive Cussler wrote this scene in his book? Do you think Clive Cussler in his book talks about his two main characters assembling a parasail out of an old airplane to sail through the sandy desert to Magic Carpet Ride? Like, as we assembled the pipes to the rope, I couldn't help but think of the lyrics to that classic Steppenwolf song.
As someone who read a Clive Cussler book in middle school, I can just tell you this is not the dumbest thing that this series does.
I can't imagine the ties to reality that they maintain over the course of them.
One interesting tie to reality is that in the book I read, Clive Cussler wrote himself into it. He shows up and helps out Dirk Pitt and his best bud in their time of great need by giving them a snow machine. It's Deus Ex Cussler.
That's what this movie was missing at the end, is Clive Cussler as the Nick Fury to bring them all together for the next movie.
What it's missing is Clive Cussler showing up to help them turn a crashed airplane into a wheel-based sailing ship to get them through the desert. Clive Cussler is the guy standing there holding a boombox playing Magic Carpet Ride.
Movie Memory Machine is part of the Gruntwork Podcast Network. Stay tuned to this channel or join us on patreon.com/gruntworkpodcast to be notified when the first episode is available. Follow us on social media at Movie Memory Machine. Movie Memory Machine, coming spring 2024.